This is
KUT.
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop. I used to get mad at my school. The teachers had taught me when cool. They're holding me down, turning me around, filling me up with your rules. To admit it's getting better, a little better all the time.
Hello, and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer.
I'm very excited. I think this is a really interesting topic, and it comes to us from Kristen, who is a listener and a Southwestern University class of 2001 graduate.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. So she wrote in and she said, I'm wondering about Dr. Berger's thoughts on leadership and management, particularly as in his presidential role, does he see himself as more of a leader or a manager? And how does Dr. Berger differentiate the two concepts? And does he place more emphasis on one area or the other? And then she also goes on, in a recent publication of the Chronicle of Higher Education, she had seen a story that was called What I Wish I Had Known Before I Was Dean. And she also wanted to know, Ed, if there is anything you wish you had known before you became president at Southwestern University. So kind of a two-part but related question there. So that concept of leader versus manager, I mean, I guess you kind of have to think about how you define those,
sure,
first of all.
Of course. Well, it's interesting. First of all, it's a great question. I'm not surprised that a Southwestern University alumna would ask such a thoughtful question. I would say that, first of all, when I was asked to take on this role and I accepted it, I had people who I've known for many, many years say to me, you know, gosh, Ed, you know, you love teaching and you love doing research in mathematics, and here you are, you're going to go to the dark side and become an administrator, and which is kind of like the manager, I think, kind of side of it. And my response at the time, and it remains, is that no, I'm not an administrator, and if I become one, then that's the time to think about, you know, something else to do. But I am a leader in education, and that's how I thought of it, you know, 6 years ago, more than 6 years ago, and that's how I think of it today, is that my primary role is to be a leader in education. What that means to me in terms of what is a leader, it's about thinking about the mission, thinking about what the direction of the institution or the project, whatever it is, and making sure that within a universe of distraction, that we do our best not to be distracted by the noise and the bells and the ringing and the lights, trying to take away that which we're supposed to be doing. And in this proposition, it's about changing people's lives and making them better versions of themselves. And everything else is noise. Now, I'm not saying it's not important noise. There's a lot of important things out there, but that's what we're trying to do. Management and managing and being a manager is the art, and I think it genuinely is the art, of making sure that an organization is running smoothly, fairly, safely, efficiently, and within all the budgetary constraints that come along with any organization. And that, of course, is the responsibility ultimately of the chief executive officer. And,
isn't that you?
And that is I. And so that is part of this job. And so when you ask, you know, what is it? Well, it's both. But when I think of myself, the reason that I do the work I do is not for the budget side. But it's really for the education, the innovation and education that we can accomplish. That being said, by the way, I don't want to put down the management side, because there's a lot of creativity, there's a lot of imagination, and there's a lot of idea energy that's required. It's not just a matter of making sure the budgets are balanced, although that's enormous in education, as you know. But it's also about, you know, imagining the future institution, even physically. You know, we're in the middle of a master planning exercise. And I just came from a meeting earlier today where we were working with our team. And those conversations were really exciting because it allowed me to take my thinking on education and think about physically what does that look like in 30 years on the Southwestern University campus. So I'm not saying that these two things are disjoint and disconnected, but when they can be bridged, it's exciting. But there's also stuff that just needs to be done because there's the working, you know, there's a bunch of staff and there's a bunch of people here and there are things that need to get done.
Well, and so let me try this out. I know Kristen was not asking about my take on this, so
sure.
I will give you my take and then you can comment on it.
No, so I want to hear it.
I very much agree. It seems like the two things kind of have to coexist, I guess, if you will.
Right.
And to me, when I think of management, I think of a little more nuts and bolts,
right,
which I think is what you were referring to.
But that's not to put it down.
No. It's
right.
Just it's a more practical, I would say, pragmatic side of whatever operation is happening. And I think of leadership as a little bit more of the idea and vision side. And
right.
And to run any institution of any kind, especially learning, you need both.
I think so. And even beyond learning, I think if you have any kind of organization that's even slightly complicated or interesting, you definitely need both to head the movement forward.
And I also think, and I'm interested to hear your thought on this, Ed, I also tend to think of management as just a little bit more top down. So maybe a little bit more instruction flows down from the top with some requests of, please do this, please do that. And here's sort of how I think we can get this done. And I think of leadership a little bit more as kind of stepping out of the way and letting some things flow upward from the participants a little more. And that's just an idea. I'm not saying that's the way it is. But I guess I also see leadership as sort of identifying the places where, oh, you know what? I think that person actually has really good thoughts about this. So I'm going to kind of let those thoughts bubble up and inform how this is going to go forward.
But to be fair, I think you can find a really creative and open-minded managers that will embrace that as well. I mean, now you're talking about kind of styles. And if you have a very open-minded perspective, whether you're thinking of yourself as a leader, a manager, or something else, where you're saying, listen, we are idea focused. And so if people bring up ideas, if people have potential solutions, top down to me means I'm not interested, we're doing it this way, and don't ask questions. To me, the more creative individual, whether the person's a manager, leader, or other, is one that says, look, I want to take in all the ideas, all the stimulation that people want to share, and let's try to form together the best solution we can. And now, if you're just going to come and complain, that's not particularly helpful. And if you refuse to throw out ideas and be solution focused, then at the end of the day, it might be the leader, whoever that is, or the manager that comes out and says, well, here's what we're going to do. Now, to be clear, though, it is the job of the CEO or the head individual to, at the end of the day, make decisions. And so when you talk about top down, you know, what you want to do is I want to get all the good ideas that are out there, see, you know, weighing if they're practical, weighing if we can do it, seeing if it's on, you know, kind of on brand and on target in terms of our strategic vision and connected with everything. Because, I mean, certainly there's a lot of great ideas and we can't do them all. So the question is, you know, how do you prioritize? And to have all those thoughtful voices be engaged and heard and have those ideas be brought forward. But then at the end of the day, a decision needs to be made. And it's not always the case. And in fact, it's rarely a case that you just kind of vote. The entire population gets a vote. Someone makes a decision. And that's part of the responsibility of the chief executive officer. And that person is held accountable to a board or to a group of regents. And they ultimately are the ones that govern. And if they don't like the decision of the CEO, then that body, that executive body, will make a decision to change leadership.
So while you're talking, what I'm thinking about is on a little bit smaller scale, and that's within an individual classroom.
Oh.
And I'm thinking about teachers, and I'm thinking about teachers as leaders and managers, and thinking about all of the qualities from both of those columns that a teacher needs to kind of successfully teach a class and run the classroom That's a lot. I mean, they kind of have to be both.
And yeah, absolutely. I hadn't thought about that, but you're absolutely right. And the truth is there's a lot more top down there, because the first day that the instructor passes out a syllabus, the instructor says, here's how you're going to be graded. The instructor says, here's the work. Now, some instructors are much more open to, you know, having the students participate in some of that ownership of the class. But the traditional template is that it's all top down. And even when the student complains and you know, I say, well, I shouldn't have gotten a C minus on this paper, I think it's better. At the end of the day, it really is up to the instructor to make that call. And so you're right, in a way. You're managing, and you're also trying to inspire, getting people involved in the suite of ideas that is that subject and that discipline. And you're trying to do both at the same time. It's an interesting point.
Can people be taught to be good managers and leaders? Or is that just something that some people are kind of born with or born to do and other people aren't?
I really don't know. I mean, you know, there's a whole field, there's a whole discipline now of leadership studies that you can, you know, major in and get graduate degrees in. I don't know the answer to that. A dear friend of mine who is in some sense the father of the field of leadership studies is a man by the name of James McGregor Burns. And I asked him, you know, what are the traits of a great leader? And he said the three things were that you had to be kind of focused on the goals and mission, and, you know, have your values in place and never deviate from those. Surround yourself with the best people you can. Don't be intimidated to be surrounding yourself with great people. And those two things I like to think I'm okay with. But the third one is the one that is vexing for me and why I guess I'm not a great leader. And that is to not only expect conflict, but to actually enjoy and embrace it. Because conflict, you know, sometimes people think, oh, well, you know, great leader can avoid conflict. And James McGregor Burns's attitude was, no, in fact, you should embrace it because it's going to come. It's inevitable. And so trying to mitigate it, just face it head on and love the drama of that. And I have to tell you, I don't like that.
All right. So I'm going to introduce some conflict now.
Oh, good.
It's time for the puzzler.
Well, why is that conflict? We like this.
Well, I don't always like it because sometimes they're difficult.
You know, you have always said how you enjoy the puzzler, and I've got you now on tape saying you don't always enjoy it.
I'm trying to enjoy it.
This is conflict. Now we've got conflict.
I just get frustrated sometimes.
Well, and we talked about the idea that maybe frustration can be a positive thing, and if we haven't, we should.
We're going to talk about that very soon, as a matter of fact.
Okay, good. All right, so let me remind our listeners and remind you the puzzle that apparently has made you very unhappy. It comes from my mother, by the way. So now you're insulting my poor mother, who's almost 90 years old.
That's why I put extra pressure on myself to do this
correctly. She adores you, and now you've just slammed this poor, poor elderly woman. Oh, my. Anyway, I'll try to collect myself. And here was the puzzler from last time. Imagine that you had to use three identical digits in a sum so that the total would be 12. And you pointed out that's easy to do. It's just 4 plus 4 plus 4. And then I said, with the additional caveat, and the digit cannot be 4. So the question is, can you have four identical digits that you write down in a sum that produces 12, and those identical digits are not 4?
Okay, so first of all, I'm assuming the answer is yes, or we wouldn't be discussing this.
Okay, that's an assumption, and keep going.
I'm going to make that assumption. I have an idea. I'm not sure it's correct, but so I'm taking this identical digit thing pretty literally.
Yeah.
So here's what I've written down. I've written down a column, and it has 6 on top of a 6 on top of a 6.
Okay.
But one of the 6s has a negative next to it. So the digits are the same. So you have 6 plus 6. That doesn't get you the right place. That gets you to 6.
Yeah.
Shoot.
But I see what you're saying.
Six
plus 6 is 12. And then somehow, so maybe you write 6 plus 6 plus 6 and just cross out the last 6. Well, that's...
So I was trying to be cutesy with the digits, but clearly that's not quite right.
Well, cutesy is required for this solution.
All right, well...
So, and you're starting with a digit that's way out there in the world of the 10 digits we have to work with. Obviously, it can't be 0 because 0 is not going to help you. So let's go to the next digit up, which would be 1. So let's just write 3 ones next to each other. And what if you wrote a plus sign between one of those? Then you would have 1 plus 11.
Oh, that's clever.
Three identical digits in
a sum.
To make 12. 1 plus 11 or 11 plus 1. 1, 1 plus 1 or 1 plus 1, 1.
Yes.
All roads lead to 12.
All roads lead to 12.
And there you have it from my almost 90-year-old mother.
That was very clever. I also learned something interesting from that is I was way overthinking it.
They're little brain teasers. They're not supposed to be deep and profound meanings of life things.
Well, I think you can extract deep and profound meanings of life from many things.
I see.
But it's interesting to me. I sort of like to assess how I approach them after we talk about them.
Yeah. So how would you assess this?
Well, I assess that I think I was thinking too much and too hard about it. And I didn't let myself just have fun with it.
Well, but I do like the idea. I mean, I thought your solution of 6 plus 6 plus 6, then cross out the last 6. That does equal 12.
It does. It does in a way.
Not in the spirit of using 3 digits.
Right.
That are
right.
Identical. Yeah.
And so as we get to the end of this episode, I don't want to forget about the last part of Kristen's question, which is she wrote in and wanted to know if there's something you wish you had known before you took over as president of Southwestern. There's probably a lot.
Well, there's stuff I wish I know now. I mean, I wish there was stuff I would know now that I don't know. Yeah, I think the answer is yes. And as you go through any challenge in life, whether it's professional or personal or otherwise, when you have those growth opportunities, you can then look back and realize how little you knew. And then you can also celebrate how far you've come. If I go back and read some of the early emails that I received when I was named the next president of Southwestern, did I tell you this?
No.
Okay. So, you know, and mostly congratulatory, you know, and from well-meaning people and within Southwestern and beyond, if I were to read a couple of those, my anxiety level goes up. And I'm not, you know me, I don't believe
it. Even now?
Yeah, I'm talking about reading it now. Because it brings me back. I mean, in reading it, I remember reading it and I remember who I was. And now knowing what I know now and remembering who I was when I first read this, it actually brings me anxiety to think of all the things that I had to learn how to do and all the things that had to be done in order for me to get to where I am right now and to have, you know, the institution kind of move where it is. And it's amazing that I actually have a physical and emotional reaction because it takes me back. So the answer is that there's lots that I wish I knew then. There's lots that I wish I knew now. And I think that that's part of the joy of taking on big challenges is to see that evolution and see that growth and look back and see that's who I was and here's who I am today. And ideally, you've grown in a positive way.
Well, Dr. Edberger, we think you've grown in a positive way.
That's one.
Dr. Edberger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jennifer Staton, KUT News.